Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to deep dive minute by minute into Frank Herbert's cinematic adaptation of the world of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
All right, John, welcome back to the week. We are here. We got a fresh set of minutes.
It is Monday.
It's Monday. And this minute that we are going to talk about starts with Gurney and Leto examining some buildings. And it ends with Jessica examining some people. So, yeah.
That's a strange way to put it, but it's not wrong. So last week, we ended talking about the Hand of God, which is this giant crater system or canyon system in the larger of the two moons that orbit Arrakis.
Yep.
We start this week with Leto dismissing the native naming of the larger moon to blame it for all of the issues that they're having with their comm system.
The Hand of God is wreaking havoc on our comm system.
Yeah, Leto isn't too pleased about this interference, and we see a first-person perspective of him looking out over the city. We're still in that telescope or binocular.
Yeah.
We haven't seen what he's actually holding, but we're on a zoomed in view looking at everything.
Yep.
We see more details on the city. Last week we were talking about how everything looks like it's carved out of stone, and everything is, you know, very, you know, there's no soft edges, and we see more of those sharp angles. We pause on one building that has it's like this weird like wing shaped kind of fins, shark fin looking thing sticking up in the sky. I just thought it was a cool, you know, design. Sure, and this just shows that, you know, Arrakis is opposite to Caladan in more ways than just the environmental differences between the planets.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. We never saw a city on Caladan.
No, you know, but we did see the palace. I'm sure
they
have them. Yeah.
I'm sure they've got to have it. But yeah, we never saw what their cities look like. I think your point still stands that they would not be this clustered and dense. It would, you know, lots more land, or at least habitable land, on Caladan. So that would stand to reason that the cities would be more spread out and probably very traditional, like buildings, instead of just this one like conglomerate of the spaces.
It's like those mega cities in China where it's just like you've got a million people in a couple square miles. And it's just
exactly. So Leto and Gurney are kind of inspecting the city, doing an inventory of what's going on, and for all intents and purposes, we get it's quiet. Too quiet.
It's a little different here, though, because...
Well, it's pretty much what he says.
True, but Leto says, it's so quiet, and Gurney turns and says, yeah, that's what worries me, too.
Yeah, they're clearly, you know, anticipating this being like a calm before the storm.
Sure.
Scenario where...
Because neither of them are stupid.
No, absolutely not. They know this is going to happen. I mean, they know that any kind of like turmoil or, you know, uprising or just any kind of like I'm losing my words here, but strife, I guess, is a good way of putting it, is inevitable.
Sure.
And they've just gotten here. This is presumably their first couple of days. We don't really get an indication.
Probably
of time.
Still that first day.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. Only because we get like hey, the sun's getting too high a little bit later. I don't think they would have done all of this in the morning, because the mornings probably don't last very long.
Fair.
On Arrakis. So having them land, go through the formal like disembarkment procedures, fly to the city. There's nothing to support this, but I'm guessing that happened the day prior to this.
It would have been nice if, you know, we could have just emailed Legendary and just be like, hey guys, can you share like the notes for the daily itineraries with us before we start recording?
Or maybe just
this?
A subtitle that says the next day.
Oh God, no, please. That would make this bad.
Maybe they could have hired the announcer from the Clone Wars TV show. The next day on Arrakis.
That would actually be pretty funny. I'm going to break some continuity here with the scenes that we see, just because I want to skip one cool scene that I promise I'm going to come back to. But Leto gives us, it's relevant because I'm breaking with breaking this continuity, because Leto and Gurney are still out looking over the city. And we definitely have a moment of, we're going to make this abundantly clear to the audience.
Okay. My notes are in line with yours. Okay.
Yeah. Where Leto points to one place on the horizon and says, that's the spaceport. And then he points to this giant building in front of him that has a giant plume of dust coming out of it. And he says, that's the spice factory.
Yep.
And he looks at Gurney and says, I need you to make sure that those two are protected at all times. And to me, that was just like, oh my God.
Okay, so let me read you my notes here.
It's like, you could have been a little more subtle about it, though, instead of just being like...
There's a point to it. My note says, Leto's puts on his docent hat and gives us a quick tour of the important parts of the city.
Yeah.
Including the spaceport and the plume of dust from the refinery, indicating that they are the two most vulnerable points. And my next point says, he's basically doing a sum up of the A story of the movie for all the audience. And it would have been so complete if he like broke the fourth wall and just looked direct, like down the barrel of the camera and said, everyone with me? Okay, cool. Let's go.
It'd be really bad if something happened to those.
Yeah. We want to protect them. We got to protect them.
I mean, he basically does that.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, though. It's a summation of what we've learned in the movie so far.
Yep.
Which, hey, listen, we're watching this minute by minute. I don't think that is necessarily a bad thing to do.
We're watching this minute by minute as two people that know a lot about
the overall story.
Yeah. As a whole.
Yeah. So I think that was, I would say that's a welcome addition to the movie.
Sure. They got to make the movie for the masses.
Yeah.
Because if you make it for...
You make it for the nerds, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Sorry, nerds.
I do want to go back to the one like brief moment that I skipped over to get to Leto's like...
Yep.
Arrakis for dummies moment. or Arrakeen for dummies moment. Sure. We have a scene from inside the palace looking out at the balcony, I guess is the term that I would want to use, that Leto and Gurney are standing on, where we see other Atreides, you know, I don't want to call all of them soldiers staff, or workers. Staff. Yeah.
Atreides staff.
They're turning these really huge, really thick stone doors. And I've seen these kind of doors just like in, pictures and videos of like super fancy houses where it's like a pivot door in the middle of the door and everything. And super cool, like design.
Yeah.
But a couple things of note, stone is actually just like a really good natural insulator. So it makes sense that, you know, everything is built out of stone here, but it's so thick, like the doors are thicker than an individual person. So,
it looks like what, 3-4 feet wide, you think?
Probably. Yeah. I can't imagine how heavy those doors have to be.
Well, if it's a good hinge, it doesn't
matter. It's a good hinge, you just like push on it with one finger and it'll rotate.
We don't know how far hinge technology has come.
I think it can only advance so far. But either way, we see, you know, a little glimpses of the amount of care that production design and everything goes into making this palace as like believable in the conditions that Arrakis puts these people into to make it, you know, a livable space and everything.
Yeah. I noted the huge deadbolts that are within the doors.
Yeah.
Like massive, like probably as big as a big around as like an average person's head.
Probably bigger.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, just these huge deadbolts within each door. I think I counted three.
Yeah. There's
per panel. So they can lock this place down if they need to.
Not only for security from outside threats, but also just probably from the sheer violence of the windstorms.
Sure, sure.
So, because you don't want those doors just spinning at the ungodly speed because of, you know, several hundred mile an hour winds.
Right.
Or whatever.
Because if they do have good hinges, they can be used for evil.
Yeah.
Instead of good.
As with all things.
And then.
Our boy Lanville shows back up.
We get Lanville with the actual lines this time. He says a couple words earlier, but he actually gets some speaking lines, like an actual sentence.
And we know it is Lanville because the subtitles say that it is coming from Lanville.
Which I don't think they did prior to this.
They did when Duncan was talking to Lanville.
Okay, they said that. Okay, gotcha.
But when we had the shields moment on the ship as they were landing.
Okay, that's the one I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah, we get Lanville. We get actual lines. He's saying something to the tune of
the sun's too high.
Yeah, yeah, sun's too high in the day or in the sky, and we need to close the doors.
Yeah,
which I made a special note. John, I think you would love living on Arrakis. Afternoon comes up, you're like, shut the doors, block out any sun. We need to make it a dungeon.
I just want to stay inside where it's cool and dark all day.
I have it in my notes here. Oh, perfect place for John.
I would hate it though, because I love like shitty rainy weather. Like if I could live in the Pacific Northwest where it's just shitty and rainy all the time, I would do that.
You could, man.
I mean, I could. Work, it's so expensive.
But work East Coast hours on the West Coast? Oh my gosh, what a dream.
No.
For me.
For you, yeah, Mr. I wake up at 4 a.m. on a Sunday.
Sure. I don't know. I think that would just be a minor sleep adjustment for you.
No, I don't like that.
All right, anyways.
I would work West Coast hours on the East Coast. That would be fantastic.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the work schedule that I want. But we're not here to talk about my work schedules. We're here to talk about Dune.
So the next line we get from Leto is, before I say what the line is, maybe you'll agree with this, but it seems out of character for him, or at least from the Leto that we've come to know so far.
Yeah,
he looks so, he's continuing his like his survey of the city, and I don't have the exact line here, but he calls Arrakis or Arrakeen, and I guess extension Arrakis. He's like, what do they say in this hellhole? Which is so great. It seems slightly disrespectful.
Yeah. What do they say in this hellhole again?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just a side of him that we haven't seen.
Yeah.
And I know that there are different sides to everyone. We've only really seen Leto in like ceremonial and formal, or like important. I know that the graveyard scene wasn't like a ceremonial thing, but it was a very like heavy moment. So he put on his like dad face.
Yeah. We haven't seen him where it's just him and his best friend.
Yeah.
Just kind of.
Yeah.
Looking over the prison effectively that they're living in for the rest of their lives.
I guess chilling's probably the opposite of what they're doing.
I don't know. I mean, they are kind of chilling because they are away from everyone else.
They're in the desert, so they're probably not chilling.
Okay. First of all, shut the fuck up. I wanted to make a note of something that I noticed here because the camera cuts to, I think it cuts to Gurney in this moment. I don't remember. But Gurney's response to that question was, to shower, you scrub your ass with sand, my lord. That's what they say.
That is what they say.
And then Leto is just, that is what they say.
Yeah. Which is, again, a small laugh line in a otherwise laugh line-less movie.
Yep. Yeah, it's one of the few moments of comedic relief that we have here.
Yeah.
But I did notice, so... 2 weeks ago, I talked about when they were on the transport ship. We see Leto with that little insignia that he had on his armor and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The metal replacement thing. Gurney has one that's similar.
Okay.
So, the top of this band, I'll just call it a band because I don't know what it's actually supposed to be called. But the top of this band has five sets of black and white stripes. Then there's like a black and white box. On Leto, there are four large gold blocks
okay.
on the bottom half.
Right. I guess those would be called like epaulettes.
Sure.
Or like pips or something.
I guess not pips. I don't know. Yeah. Gurney has the same five black and white, the gold, the black box, but then two gold bars on the bottom.
Okay.
So I went back and looked at all of the other scenes. The only other time that I saw this was during the Ceremony of the Change. We see Thufir Hawat, five black and white, black box, one gold. So my question is, who has the three gold? Is that Paul?
I would assume Duncan
Idaho? Would Duncan Idaho have any reason to be ranked higher than Gurney Halleck?
I don't think we ever see Duncan in ceremonial dress like
no,
this.
We only see him in, so far we've only seen him in his flight suit.
Yeah. Okay, so.
And we've seen him in Paul's vision, but that he was just in robes and still suit. So
if we're going to tie this back to our current time, maybe Thufir is like a one-star general.
Yeah.
And then Gurney's a two-star general.
But it wouldn't make sense for Duncan Idaho to be a higher-ranked general than Gurney Halleck, would
it? Probably not. So, I mean, if we were to ever see his, I would assume that he would have the same ranking as Gurney. Because we've talked about this, they share a lot of the same tasks. They're about the same.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be out of the question for Paul to have three, just because he's the Duke's son.
The heir to...
Yeah. Or it would make sense for him to have none.
I'm kind of in that camp.
Yeah.
Where he's just waiting on his inheritance in this moment.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, did you...
Cause Paul wasn't wearing anything during the Herald of the Change.
Yeah.
He only had like some... like gold chain thing going on his on his arm, similar to the one that his dad had, but obviously Leto had more.
Yeah. I would have to assume
Leto's two chains in this situation.
I would have to assume that it is a military rank kind of thing. And while Thufir, and I think keeping that line of thought makes sense.
Yeah,
Because Thufir is not necessarily a tactical person. I mean, he is very tactical.
He's a tactician. But he's not a
combat person.
Right.
So him being a one-star general would make sense. Having Gurney and Idaho as like two or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Because they, command the troops and everything would also, that would fall in line. This is coming from someone who has no experience personally in the military. So I don't know if that actually makes sense, but in my brain, that makes sense.
Logically.
Yeah.
That's what makes sense to me. Yeah. So just a little observation that I made.
Sure. Sure. Well, that's what the show's about, man. All these, the fine details,
it's the little things.
So after the scene, with Leto and Gurney, we cut to a different room within the castle, where we see, Thufir Hawat leading Jessica up to a line of people. And he says, "Candidates for housekeeper, my lady."
And then he just walks off.
He gives a little bow and he walks off.
And our minute ends there.
Well, before we stop though, we get the bull in the background.
We do.
Yep. We get guards everywhere. I mean, so this is clearly like, they're still unpacking.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
Well, the bull is still in the box. It just had the front panel that was placed on the box earlier removed. So, and
I had a question of like, do you think it's the same bull's head?
Absolutely.
Maybe. Their bulls are clearly very important to the Atreides. Maybe they have more than one.
But it is the bull that killed the old Duke.
Maybe they have more than one head they brought with them.
I doubt it. We
don't know. We've ever seen is the one head, so it's safe to assume that it is the same one.
Yeah.
But it looked a little bit smaller. The only reason that I say this is because it looked a little bit smaller. It could be a perspective thing.
I think it's a perspective thing because it was far back in the room. So. Yeah.
I don't know. Just it stood out to me. I was like, that one kind of looks a little bit smaller. So, but yeah, we've only seen one bull's head. So that is the one that we are left to assume that it is the same bull's head.
Yep.
That was my last note on the minute, man. Anything else from you?
Nothing from this minute. It's kind of, it was nice to see, Leto and Gurney just kind of having their own little moment together. Cause I think that's the only time that we see them just by themselves in this movie.
It's definitely is so far. And I think it's the only words we've seen from them other than smile, Gurney. I am smiling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the only words we've seen exchanged between the two. So yeah, it's good to see them.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, that'll do it for this Monday. We will be back tomorrow to talk about minutes 41 through 42. And just continue to see this weird interview process that Jessica has.
Yeah, you're in it for a couple minutes, so we'll have a little bit to talk about.
If you'd like to get in touch with us for whatever reason, hopefully nice ones, you can reach out to us on Twitter at Dune Minute. You can reach out to us via email at duneminute@gmail.com. And we are on Instagram at The Dune Minute.
Yeah.
So yeah, looking forward to hearing from folks. We will be back tomorrow on the Dune Minute podcast.
See you guys later.
See you.